Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA.
Kia ora, te whanau. Welcome to the AA Live radio show this evening. I am looking forward to tonight's show as we have a guest presenter here with me tonight that I have great respect for. Welcome, Kevin. Lovely to see you.
Nice, Jan. Thank you to be good to be here.
Good to be here. Yeah. It's really nice. And you haven't been to the new studios, which is quite nice too.
So. No, it's lovely.
Yeah, thank you. We've also got an interview this evening. I went and spent some time with Peter. He's been sober now for 28 years and he's recently relocated here. So we're very fortunate enough that he had time to catch up with me on the weekend for a coffee and a chat. So later on in the show, listeners, we will have Peter's story, which is a bit of it's interesting. It's fun. I think you'll enjoy. So, let's get on with it. It's great to have you out there around the Motu this evening and across the world. We love our listeners all over the place. Now, this show is a show that explores the ideas behind a way of recovery with alcoholism through the Alcoholics Anonymous program. And I'm going to read to you the preamble that we have at the beginning. This is something that we read at the beginning of each meeting. And as you can tell, I'm not very organized because I'm doing a little bit of rustling of the paper here today. I've had one of those days where I thought I was Frank Spencer. You haven't heard of him, have you, Kevin?
No, I haven't.
No, it's an English program I grew up with and he had a lot of accidents and I've been a bit like that today. So, yeah. There's no such thing as perfection, is there?
No.
All right, so if I'm going to read the preamble, that'll give you folks out there an idea of what you're going to have when you come into a meeting at Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So when we get into a meeting, once we've got our coffee, our tea, our biscuits, all that stuff, we get down into it and we share our experiences. Kevin, I imagine when you first went into the rooms, they were still smoking in the rooms, weren't they?
They sure were. It drove me out of the rooms for a while. I couldn't handle the smoking. I had quit. I quit before I quit drinking. I quit smoking, and that was really hard. But my wife gathered the children in a corner and said, "Let's not get in Daddy's way today," that sort of thing. But yeah.
Did you find it difficult to give up smoking?
Oh yeah, extremely. Yeah.
Yeah, I gave up smoking.
3 days. 3 days. It was over though. The withdrawal was over in 3 days.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Gosh, I tried giving up smoking like I used to try and give up drinking. One I really succeeded at.
Yeah.
And now I'm succeeding on a daily basis at the drinking, which I am quite grateful for. Now, listeners, I just want you to know that what Kevin and I talk about tonight, those are purely our opinions. It's not necessarily that of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, so please don't be offended by stuff that comes out of us. Now, I thought we would start with today's daily reflection. Would you like to do the honors for us on that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. My name's Kevin, and I'm an alcoholic. The reflection is titled Equal Rights. At one time or another, most AA groups go on rulemaking benders. After a time, fear and intolerance subside, and we realize that we do not wish to deny anyone his chance to recover from alcoholism. We wish to be just as inclusive as we can, never exclusive. That's from AA Traditions, how it developed, page 10, 11, and 12. AA offered me a complete freedom and accepted me into the fellowship for myself. Membership did not depend upon conformity, financial success, or education, and I am so grateful for that. I often ask myself if I extend the same equality to others, or if I deny them the freedom to be different. Today, I try to replace my fear and intolerance with faith, patience, love, and acceptance. I can bring these strengths to my AA group, my home, and my office. I make an effort to bring my positive attitude everywhere I go. I have neither the right nor the responsibility to judge others. Depending on my attitude, I can view newcomers to AA, family members, and friends as menaces or as teachers. When I think of some of my past judgments, it is clear how my self-righteousness caused me spiritual harm. That's AA Daily Reflection. Thank you.
That's great. I like that. That gives us for me, that acceptance of others as they are. I mean, you've been in the rooms, gosh, how many years now, Kevin?
Well, my first go around was 18 years. Unfortunately, I stopped going to meetings after about 13 years, and I managed to stay sober for another 5 until my wife passed away.
Mm.
The last 3 years of her life were was pretty heavily into caretaking, so I didn't even think about drinking. But after she passed away, the busyness of the funeral and all that stuff was going away, and then I found myself alone. I was no longer connected to AA, and I drank again. I knew I was powerless over alcohol, but at that time I didn't care. And I was grieving, and I needed something, but it just made the grief worse. It made everything worse, and it took me a few years to get back into AA. And fortunately, as you can probably tell by my accent, that I'm not a native Kiwi.
You're a Kiwi, though, as far as we're concerned.
Oh, yeah, I know. I live here permanently. But I did manage to find another wife after 3 years, and married her, and now I live in New Zealand.
Did you come into the rooms again prior to that second marriage or after that second marriage?
After the second marriage, yes. I couldn't imagine putting my wife through the hell that I had experienced.
Mm.
It was pretty bad. Mm. I managed to get myself into emergency rooms a couple of times. I was so bad.
Was that here in New Zealand?
No.
Okay.
That was in the United States.
Right.
But after I came to New Zealand, I still had a couple of issues. But after about a year of marriage, I came back into the rooms. I found myself a good sponsor. I was living up in Ashburton at the time and found myself a good sponsor up there and came back into the rooms and I managed to stay sober.
So when you, just on that, thinking about that daily reflection and that acceptance of others and being there in service and being there for other people and showing the, I suppose, the tools in which you've picked up in the rooms, I imagine you do a lot of that work. Would that be right? That you're out there sharing with people, sponsoring people, that side of things? Do you do that?
Yes, I've had the opportunity to sponsor a couple of times. Not too recently. I always put my hand up when they ask if anybody's willing to sponsor, but I haven't had any takers lately.
Do you know, I have to say, I've always thought to myself, you would have too many. Is that right? You're available.
Yes, I am.
Well, hey, you folks out there, locals, Kevin's available.
Yeah. I'd be happy to sponsor anybody that, would like me.
Yeah, right. And so when you think about your recovery, what are the top three things to you that you think I must do to retain my recovery?
Well, the number one thing, of course, I learned my lesson the first time around after I quit going to meetings and didn't remain connected to my AA program. The main thing for me today is to go to meetings. That's the most important thing. Keep my connection to meetings. I can keep in touch with my sponsor, but, after many years of sobriety, we don't talk that much anymore. I don't have any problems that I really need to discuss with my sponsor anymore. But the important thing is to maintain contact with your sponsor. The other thing is I do have, thank God for Facebook and email and things like that. I have friends in my AA group in the United States that I maintain contact with, and we banter back and forth. I just recently had one of them pass away, a lady who was a good friend. And one of the things she always closed the meeting with is that a grateful alcoholic will not drink. And that's another thing. Maintain gratitude. At the end of the day, if you stop and think about all the things you have to be grateful for, and one of them is not drinking, and the other one is having an AA group, that you have a lot of friends with, and, you look forward to seeing them every week, So that's it.
Yeah, I have to agree that gratefulness is, it's very important for me too. Mm-hmm. I start my day with my gratitude list. I know it says quite often we're supposed to finish our day with it, but I find it puts me on the right level for the day of what's coming. And whenever there's any challenges or so forth, I feel like, yeah, I can deal with that because life is not bad. And I become really grateful for it. And yes, meetings. Did you find when you first came in that you were alone in a sense, and have you found a sort of AA family?
My first contact with AA was kind of interesting because I had a good friend that owned a print shop that was next to the AA intergroup office.
In what city?
This was in Orlando, Florida.
Right.
And it was right next door to the intergroup office. So this friend that owned the print shop, I'd been there at his place many times, so I knew where the AA office was. And when I finally decided that, I needed help, I walked into that office looking for where the meetings would be. And there were three guys sitting at a table sharing a cup of coffee. And they invited me to sit down. And they chatted with me for probably a good hour. And they didn't tell me what I had to do. They just shared their experiences. They told me how they ended up in AA. I haven't run into anybody that's told me what to do. All they ever do is tell me what they did and how their experience worked out. And of course, the meeting was on the other side of the building, and in a storefront little place. And so when I went around to the meeting, there was an old fella named Walt Sims that was setting the place up and making the coffee and everything. And he introduced himself. He was a real friendly guy. I'm sure he's passed away now because that was 1985.
Right. A little while ago.
And he was pretty elderly then. And of course, he used his last name with no regrets. And but there was a big banner on the front of that room that says, "You're not alone anymore." And that struck me because even though I was surrounded by family and there were people around me all the time, in my heart, I felt like I was alone. I felt like there was nobody else I could share my problem with. And the meeting was good, and I kept going back to that meeting. Unfortunately, after a couple of weeks, you start feeling better, and you start feeling like you're healed. You're okay again. And it did take me a couple of years to actually get into AA permanently.
Yeah, was there a bit more research going on, was there?
Absolutely, yeah. As soon as you start feeling good, you think, oh, I can have another drink. It's not going to hurt. The problem is one drink is all it takes. It flips that little switch in your brain, and all you want to do is have another one. And then a third, and of course, then you're on the road. And that's no looking back at that point.
Yeah, it's quite scary how that is, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 I think if I had come into the rooms, if I had come into the rooms earlier, I would have been in and out doing lots more research. I'm one of the very lucky ones. So I'm incredibly grateful for the fact that while I hit my rock bottom when I came in, I got it straight away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it took time, obviously, but I didn't go out and do any more research again.
Well, that's good. In the U.S., we would have called you a one-chip wonder.
Yeah.
Because we used to give away a little white poker chip with the AA hotline phone number on it, and when people first come into the rooms, and there weren't many one chip wonders, to tell you the truth, but I certainly wasn't. But what they tell on what one chip wonders usually say is, let somebody else go out and do the experimenting. I'm staying here.
Yeah, I like that. I've still got my chip. It sits in my wallet. But
that's good.
It's very important. And my other chips that I've managed to achieve are, they were in a picture frame, but my son likes to play with them. So they sit on a windowsill and he plays with them every now and then. And he normally comes up and gives me a hug and says, I'm really proud of you. So, yeah, it's a nice part of the life. One chip wonder. That's brilliant. I'm quite surprised.
That's what
you are. Yep. Well, there's miracles in the rooms of AA. That's all I can say about that. And tell me, you always share something in the meeting that I see you at, which I love, and that is the power within the rooms and how we talk about that higher power is all of us sitting in that circle. And
that's it. Yeah, that's the spirit of the group. And you can feel it when you're in there, after you've been there. You know, when you get over the fact that you're a stranger in the group and you start meeting people and getting along with folks around you and all that sort of stuff, you feel like you belong, you know. You feel like, but you can feel the power. You can feel the power of that group. And they don't have to say anything to you, but you know it's there, you know. You know that they're there for you. And anytime you need anything, 3.5 years ago, my son died, my oldest son. And lo and behold, the next day, two members of my AA group showed up at my house to comfort me on that thing, you know. And he was a long way away. I mean, he died in the United States, and I was in New Zealand. I couldn't do anything about it. And I couldn't get back to the U.S. or anything. Everything had to be done long distance for me. And they postponed the funeral service and everything till I got back.
Gosh, was this in the middle of COVID as well?
Yes.
Oh, gosh, Kevin. Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. And but anyway, I get over it. You know, it's still you still feel the loss and everything, of course. But the fact that was important to me was that two members of the AA group showed up at my home. You know, they knew that I needed support, you know, that kind of support. And that was important.
I agree. It's quite amazing what you get in these rooms. I've had the same thing when I've needed someone, and the people that turned up have been my fellow AA sisters, and it's just incredible. It's a whole new family. I certainly don't feel alone anymore. And the fact that you brought up that banner, you are not alone, so true. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I'm surprised this meeting that I go to now doesn't have a banner like that. But that's, you know, that's important. You know, you let people know that they're not alone anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
And especially new people, let them know that you know, you're going to start feeling good after a week or two. And if you want to experiment, you can try it. But you know, if you take one drink, it's going to lead you right back out.
Well, it is true that once you've come into the rooms, folks, it does stuff up your drinking a little bit. But you can come back. And, you know, I've seen people come in and out of the rooms, and it's always lovely to welcome them. And there's never any judgment. There's never anybody saying, oh, you idiot, where have you been, or anything like that. It's always just a welcoming group of people.
Exactly.
It's really amazing.
AA is not a religious group. Not associated with any religions or anything like that, but I do remember a passage, and I've always remembered it in Matthew's Gospel, where Peter is asking Jesus, "How many times should we forgive?" And Peter says 7 times, which is awfully generous because, you know, 3 times is, you know, in the United States, three strikes and you're out, you know. And
yep.
Peter says 7 times, and no, Jesus says 70 times 7, you know. And the only place I've ever seen that practice is in AA, because no matter how many times you go out, they will always welcome you back in. Maybe this time you'll make it. Maybe this time, you know, it will be the one. So you're always welcome.
Yeah, it is a lovely thing like that. Yeah. And people, I think, sometimes hear that the door swings both ways, come back in, but they don't believe it until they come in. And there it is.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, you are listening to the AA Live Show in association with our friends from Otago Access Radio on 105.4 FM. It is lovely to be here this evening, but we're going to play a little bit of a track. Now, I've pulled out some Seal. This is just because this was in my little box of goodies with the radio. So I hope you enjoy this.
Side of me, love remains a drug that's the high and not the pill. But did you know that when it snows, my eyes become large and the light that you shine can't be seen? Baby, I can bring you to a kiss from a rose on the grave. Ooh, the more I get, I feel stranger. A man can tell you so much he can say. You remain my power, my pleasure, my pain. Baby, to me you're like a grown addiction that I can't deny. Won't you tell me, is that healthy, baby? But did you know that when it snows, my eyes become a lot and the light that you shine can't be seen. Baby, I can pay you to a kiss from a rose on the grave. Ooh, the more I get of you, the stranger it feels, yeah. Now that your rose is in bloom, a light hits the gloom on the grave. So much a man can tell me, so much he can say. You remain my power, my pleasure, my pain. To me you're like a grown addiction that I can't deny. Now won't you tell me, is that healthy, baby? But did you know that when it snows, my eyes become a large and the light that you shine can't be seen? On the brain. Ooh, the more I get of you, the stranger it feels, yeah. Now that your rose is in bloom, a light hits the gloom on the brain. Yes, I can pay you to a kiss from a rose on the brain. Ooh, the more I get of you, the stranger it feels, yeah. Your roses in bloom, a light light hits the gloom on the grave.
We are here with Peter, who has kindly come to talk to me about his story with alcohol, his journey in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it is wonderful to have you here, Peter. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Yeah, so my name's Peter. I'm an alcoholic. I'll give you a quick thing on my background, because I think there's two parts that make me an alcoholic. One is the way I drank, and the other one is kind of to do with my thinking. But just a quick version of my drinking. Like, for example, my mother had this story. She was in the States, and this guy came in who was an alcoholic and came to his mother's house, drank a bottle of whiskey and left. And that really struck me as a kid. I thought, oh, that's the sort of thing an alcoholic would do. They'd come to your house, drink a bottle of vodka or whiskey and leave. It's kind of an easy thing to understand. And as a short version, I am definitely the sort of person who could come to your house and drink a bottle of vodka and disappear and then go dancing and drink more vodka, you know, or whatever it is I happen to be drinking at the time. So one of the things is I did drink quite a lot. But it can also be a bit confusing. Like I used to, you know, the addiction side of it can be a bit confusing. I've used to smoke. And if you smoke cigarettes, you smoke every day. You don't take the day off, you don't take the weekend off. And if you're a junkie, if you're addicted to heroin, you know, if there's any way you can get hold of heroin, you do it. For me, being an alcoholic, there are alcoholics who drink every single day. And it can be kind of like a scale, a point where, as long as you don't die, I think most alcoholics will get to that point. I tended to be more of a 5 days a week drinker, but it would take up the whole day. I would say, and some people would drink during the night, or, you know, they'd wake up or they'd drink first thing in the morning. I would not do that. I'd get up, have a cigarette, throw up, have a coffee, have another cigarette, throw up, have another, you know. And then after about an hour, I'd think, oh, I'd pop down to the pub and have a drink. And it would seem like quite a normal idea. It wasn't like some crazy craving like you'd imagine on a TV program. And I'd have a couple of pints, and I'd start putting whiskey in my pints, and then, you know, I'd start drinking vodka, and I'd get home, you know, 12 hours later. And that was Wednesday, and Thursday and Monday and Tuesday were all pretty much the same thing. But then some days you just kind of run out of money and go see my mum, or I don't know, go somewhere and just eat food for a day. Well, no, I wouldn't just eat food for a day, but, you know, like, so one of the things about it, if you were to look at me, I think you wouldn't doubt that I was an alcoholic. If you see the amount of effort I put into it, the way Tiger Woods plays golf or Eric Clapton plays guitar, that's how you think of them. But to talk to me, I don't think it was obvious. Like, I ran a restaurant where I drank a bottle of vodka every day, and plenty of people there never met me when I wasn't drinking at all. You know, I could talk to you. I could talk to you about, I don't know, physics or how to fix a car, or I don't know. You know, like, I was quite functioning in the way that I would talk to you and interact with you. And, you know, I was running this really busy kitchen. But I did, in a funny way, know that there was something a little bit wrong. So I tried making adjustments. I didn't do very well at school. I got thrown out of school. And I didn't get some important exams. So I went back to university as an older student, and I was fine. You know, I survived okay, except for my drinking got on the road. So it turns out whether I was at university or wasn't at university, I drank the same. Same with working. I didn't work. I drank all the time. I did work. I drank all the time. I found jobs where you could drink. So the work wasn't the secret thing. And I've been in relationships. I've been single. I've been in New Zealand. I've been in Australia. I've traveled around the world. I made all these kind of variations to my life. And I wasn't actually trying to stop drinking. God forbid. That's the last thing in the world I'd want to do, is actually stop drinking. I just thought, there's something weird going on here, and I just couldn't quite put my finger on it. And so I was kind of playing around with that. And I suppose a lot of people would do, I don't know how other people do life, but I would imagine a few people would do life somewhere like that. But a couple of things happened that changed my mind, and they're really random. They're not what you'd expect. But one was, I went and saw this movie. I was working in a Mexican restaurant. And the first night I worked there, I was made homeless. So I slept in a telephone booth. outside this restaurant that didn't tell them about it. Turned up to work, got hired, did a couple of weeks work with them, and then they said, you know, could you run the place? We've got to go overseas. So next thing you know, I'm running this Mexican restaurant. But by then I'm homeless, so I'm actually staying with the Salvation Army in Melbourne, in this, you know, like DOS house with like hundreds of other alcoholic people. This did not tell me that I was an alcoholic. And the fact that this is the second time I'd stayed in this DOS house, I'd stayed there like, you know, in my early 20s by now, I'd just turned 30, I think. Still no idea that I might be an alcoholic. And so I went to the movies and I saw Steel Magnolias, which has got Dolly Parton in it. It's about a bunch of women. And there's a bit without ruining the movie, where this woman gets a haircut and, well, without giving the whole thing on the whole movie, it's about a very sick woman.
And Julia Roberts.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh. And so I could really relate to, particularly this first thing that happens to her is when she gets a haircut, the whole room just expands and contracts and expands and contracts. And I don't know what would give me that thing. I think it's getting really stoned and getting drunk and then smoking weed, but I really could empathise with this woman. There's a glass door moment and there's a thing on that happens on a pair of steps and she dies. And I'm like, wow, that's really weird. I just empathised with a woman who's so sick that she died. And I think it got under all my defence systems, if it had been about men or if it had been about drinking or been about drugs. But because it was about a woman getting a haircut, I was too relaxed and it snuck up and hit me on the back of the head. So that was the first indicator that I was like, oh. But I didn't quit drinking because alcoholics don't quit drinking if they possibly can or become aware that they're alcoholics. We kind of, well, let's say bush it.
Yeah, well, it's actually a part of your daily existence. So you don't see it as an issue.
Yeah, it's like
breathing.
Yeah, normal's normal. If you're in a war zone at the moment, as long as you've been in the war zone for a while, you know, you just learn to judge mortar shells, you know, I guess. So it's kind of like that. But then I wake up one day and I was in bed with my girlfriend. Literally, I wake up and it was from a blackout. And it turns out I'd punched my girlfriend, and my flatmate was standing in the doorway, and he worked in a really trendy theatre. The reason I point that is, I mean, like an artistic kind of guy, and I said, well, there's nothing good about punching your girlfriend. I just couldn't believe that I'd done that. And actually what I did is I swiveled around on the bed and put my feet on the floor, calmed down my flatmate, and said, yeah, everything's good here. You can see he looked suspicious and he left. And I thought, look what she's made me do. And then that was the second horrible thing of the whole incident. Well, there's three horrible things. One, that I did it. Two, there was a witness. Three, that I thought that.
It was her fault.
It wasn't her fault. I mean,
no, but that was your instant response.
Yeah, and I instantly knew that that's exactly what assholes say. Mm. And that didn't stop me drinking. Because I'm not kidding. We just don't want to stop drinking. But those two things woke me up. It's a bit like, you know, the Matrix, the blue, red pill. It's like I'd swallowed the pill twice. and some other incidents happened, and eventually I set off and went to my first meeting, and my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I was quite shocked. I kind of was prepared from TV, so I planned this big involved drinking story, but what I wasn't prepared for is how normal people looked, how relaxed people were, how few, you know, it's okay to be a gang member, but, you know, it just wasn't what I expected. And one of the things, for example, I've spent a lot of time hanging out with hairdressers. This girl in front of me stood up. She had a lovely asymmetric bob, nice earrings, just this really neat, cute girl. And she'd been not drinking for 6 weeks. And I was like, wow. I mean, I've tried three times in my life to quit drinking for 3 weeks, and that's... I could do that. I'd never been sober for 6 weeks. So there was a couple of things about her. There was that, and, you know, she just didn't fit this kind of cliche. I had nobody in the room fitted the cliche. So the other thing is that I'd like to mention my background. I mean, I came from a suburb in Wellington. It's a really very middle-class suburb. Although I wasn't conscious of that at the time, I thought we didn't have enough money and I want more toys and, you know, it's not that I didn't think of myself as, oh, I'm so well off, I'm so lucky. It was quite the opposite. But I was. I mean, I go walking up in that area now and I just think I could never live in an area like that. That's just not the way my life has turned out. Mm. So I'm just mentioning this because it's not a country and western song, you know, like your wife dies, your dog dies, somebody steals your truck and you go on the piss and drink bourbon and, you know, become an alcoholic. It's not how it works. And in my particular case, two doors down from me, we always had the same house, we didn't move houses, was a husband and wife, and they're both in Auschwitz. Now, life doesn't get worse than Auschwitz, and they are not alcoholic.
Mm.
I grew up in a very nice area with nice parents who didn't argue or fight and never money problems, you know what I mean? But my grandfather was an alcoholic, and you can see it spotted around in my family. But it is a hard...
Well, it's media as well, isn't it? Media, says, oh, if you're on the dole, if you're an alcoholic or you've got a drug issue, then you came from the socioeconomic group, and, you know, they put you in a box. But actually, what you see in Alcoholics Anonymous is people from every range of life.
And by media, I would say particularly, I mean movies.
Mm,
not,
movies,
you know, like the news, but that whole kind of, I think it's starting to improve, particularly in America. You can say 12-step program on the news. I've seen somebody say that, and Americans know what you're saying, whereas I'm pretty sure in New Zealand most people wouldn't know what that meant if you said that. But, you know, there are plenty of people who did grow up in really rough households. One of the really strange things about AA is we don't tend to lose our jobs. We tend to be very good workers who are always skiving off work, always hungover. You know, in theory, you think we'd be shockers, but we, for some bizarre reason, we're really good workers. And one of the cliches is the last thing to go is your job. And another thing is you figure the wife leaving or the husband. But, you know, we can say whatever we like, and it's amazing. Often somebody will come in and say, the wife left. You know, it can be either way around. But anyway, the wife left. Quite often they take the dog with them because they don't trust you with the dog. And it can be quite sudden. You know, you can just come home to an empty house, or it can be, you know, more drawn out. But usually what most people think is, oh, good, everything will be okay once she leaves. And then a week later they go, oh, my God, it wasn't her. And they join AA.
Mm.
And it's not because they want their wife back. It's more like they swallow the blue pill. I can't remember the colour of the pill for sure. But you know what I mean? It's like they're more like...
Yes, a realisation.
Yeah, it wasn't my life. It wasn't my boss. It wasn't my, you know, it was like...
It was me.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And so the other thing I'd like to say is I you know, like I've been quite clear, there's no way I wanted to quit drinking because I was just, that was all I understood. And when I quit drinking, I felt a little, I've lived in lots of countries, I felt like a bit of a refugee in my own country because the way other people were processing the universe was quite different than the way I was. And I've done, you know, religious studies and anthropology, and I read a lot. But I was kind of intellectualizing the world, and I wasn't really grasping the basic way that people were going through life. It was more of an emotional thing. I was kind of emotionally damaged. I was actually overthinking. But one of the things that AA does, one of the things, you have a choice. But, you know, like if you did karate, you know, there's this thing, and you'd pop out the end with a black belt. So we have this kind of process, if you like, the 12 steps. And the idea is you'd pop out at the end of it and you'd be in a much better position to deal with the universe and help other alcoholics and, you know, help yourself. But you could be in AA your entire life and never do any of those things, and we're fine with you. It's not like, you know, there was a particular guy I used to go to meetings with, and basically he would come to every meeting and say why he didn't like AA and come back the next day sober, and we'd be like, fine. We don't care. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, there is a level of acceptance of people within AA that I've never seen before.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I can't imagine any other group. And there's this little neat little reading that happens at the very beginning. You can run any group the way you like, but somehow it does end up being kind of uniform, but it doesn't have to be that way. But they read out these things. So there was a few things I didn't want in my first meeting. I thought, if they charge me money, I'm not going to do it. Whereas, you know, I was spending like $100 a day, you know, on drinking, you know, but, oh, no, God forbid, it costs $5. It doesn't cost anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it better not cost any money. It better not be part of some kind of religion or something. I thought, I don't know why I thought of that, but for some reason I did. It's not.
I think a lot of people think that, though.
Yeah, I don't know where I got that idea from.
It has been depicted like that. I tend to find people who have thought that don't understand the program.
I mean, there's plenty of people who are doing it who don't understand.
But it was that way at the beginning. There was a religious aspect to it. It's evolved.
Yeah.
To a spiritual program.
Yeah, but yeah, we don't get.
Yeah, don't go into that. No, because it's individual.
But also, it can be like, I came from, my grandmother was a nun, for example. And my, so I was brought up in a religious household, but not in a, maybe that the way that would imply. It was just a kind of a fact of life, like how you use grammar in English and how you use maths. And but it wasn't like, we had this huge Bible. It was just this monster thing. You could actually beat someone to death with it. It was never opened or read. You know what I mean? It was, I don't know how to describe it really, but it was just, it was a very undramatic way to be. But it was a big deal to me when I decided that for myself that was all bollocks. That did actually sort of throw my universe for a little bit, but that had nothing to do with AA. That happened when I was about quite young, 13, 14. But so...
The conditions that you had when you came into the rooms.
Yeah, so that made me, it gave me a kind of a bias, if you like. But I would say to jump ahead, and I'm still sober now. I'm sober 28 years.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
especially if you'd actually known me in the old days, there was this, like, you'd be really amazed. Like I said, this thing, it was a bit like being a refugee in your own country, because I did feel a bit strange at first, but I am used to... Anyway, I adjusted. By the time I stopped, I'd actually got very scared of alcohol. Like I was saying, I was resistant, but eventually I got to the point where I was like, I'm not choosing this. I'm just making excuses for something I can't actually control. And I became really scared that I couldn't stop. And ironically, that's how I stopped. But anyway, I would get past that, if you will. So once I got past that year, there was things I liked. I liked not vomiting every morning, for example. I liked, after 6 months, my shakes went away. I liked to draw. This colour spectrum, weirdly enough, improved at about 6 months on. I started to relate to members of my family wildly better. And I come from a nice family, but I just... So I started to... Once I got over my refugee status, I started to get used to people in a very good way. The relationships I had with... girls got, I was getting a bit older by then and I wasn't drunk all the time, so there was less of them, but they were much, much better. I was just paying attention on a really different level. And I've done interesting things. I've travelled a lot. I've been up to base camp on Everest and, eventually had the nerve to get married and the nerve to get divorced, as it turns out. But it's been cool, and I feel very lucky that I've had these two lives. I had my drunken, crazy life and my sober, I don't want to call it sensible, but my sober, textured life. I always think it's like I love clothes. And, if you go shopping on the internet, I certainly shop on the internet, but there's nothing like going into a shop and touching the fabric or trying the shoes on, or you know what I mean? And even the whole thing about the shop. Reality has become like that for me. It's like this really kind of, it just has a feel to it and a smell and a texture. And it's once I got over the initial shock, it's a really cool place to be. And I can see why everybody else, or why other people, just leave it alone and enjoy it as it is. So that'd be quite a bit of money. Yeah, and I don't regret it. I mean, if I didn't like it, I'd just go buy a bottle of vodka. I mean, I've got a ton of money on me right now. And I don't know where the nearest bottle of vodka is, I suppose. I don't know, 5 minutes away. You know what I mean? Like... Yeah.
Yeah, it's given you choices, and it's given you, has it made you comfortable with who you are?
Oh yeah, actually that would be that was a good question. Because one of the things is I'm a slightly eccentric person. I like clothes, so I dress reasonably well. I read a lot of books. I'm lucky. I can get on very well with people. I can get on with complete. I could start a conversation with a rock, I think. But I am unlike most people. I've had a huge amount of jobs. I've lived in lots of weird places. I've had a ton of really strange experiences. But it's nice to just not. like supposing, you know, that I thought my destiny was to be a cowboy, you know, and so you have to get a hat and a horse and learn how to ride and do all those things. And but I mean, other people decided that should be my destiny, and none of these things suited me. I think if I tried to be something other than myself, it's just an awful lot of energy, and even people are liking somebody that's not me. So it took a sort of a nerve just to relax into myself, just to sort of drop your shoulders in a really, really big way and just be me and make my jokes and talk my way and make mistakes. You know, like I often say silly things or do something. I say it out loud. I went, oh, sorry about that. That was a bit stupid, or the opposite, defend myself, you know. So actually, yeah, one of the really nice things is to actually just sort of wake up one day and I'm me, you know, which is, you know, I didn't just drink vodka. I drank really good champagnes and I had a bourbon phase. But, you know, but there's a bit where you just have a drink and you just feel relaxed. And I basically feel like that all the time, you know.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? We chase that feeling to be, what's the word? How do I describe it? We go into drinking to try and fit into life. Now, without drinking, you fit into the life in which you're living comfortably, you know, without the angst. Or I'm not saying that we never have angst. Hello, that's not quite right. But it's, you're a fascinating, interesting person due to your experiences. I always love listening to your sharing, and I'm glad that you've done this move to this region, because I think you add to the fascination of life, that you make life interesting.
Thanks.
If we didn't have people like that, imagine if we were all just, I instantly have a vision, I think it was a Monty Python movie where the accountants are all doing the, going click, click, click on the calculator and then pulling the string and click, click, and that's all they ever did. Imagine if we had people like that in the world, it would be.
Actually, one of the things I say to people, because, you know, I'm not the only person who doesn't, you know, like particularly teenagers, but I say there's enough ordinary people, they don't need one more. Like there's 10 billion or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like nobody
wants. Well, you don't want to be that same tin of baked beans, do you? You want to have a little bit of, you know, spice in it.
And also, people don't really care too much. You know, if I decided to become a cowboy and wear a frock, nobody but me is going to care.
It's interesting, but before that, we always thought everybody was looking at us and everybody, yeah. And it did matter. One of the things that Alcoholics Anonymous and its program has done for me is to find a bit of peace and serenity where it's okay to be me. Beforehand, I didn't think it was.
It reminded me of a thing, because this has got nothing to do with any other addictions, but as it happened, you just have these funny moments in life. So I chain smoked for ages when people could afford such things.
Yeah.
And so I was driving down the terrace in Wellington, and it was this really random thing, and I could see this woman walking down this hill in front of me on the terrace, and she just had that slightly wired look to her. I would say she was in her late 40s, and I went, oh, you're a smoker. That's what my brain told me. And it was just one of those moments, you go, yeah, because I was a smoker. Smokers are always really wired. And then, but the thing is, we smoke to relax. So
we think.
Yeah, but it's having this kind of opposite effect because of the addiction. You're always kind of needing to have this cigarette, and then you kind of relax for 10 minutes. Then it's that same sort of a thing. You know, you're drinking to relax, but you end up being really wired. I mean, as an aside, this is not the main issue, but imagine if every time you went to see your you wanted a mortgage broker or your car mechanic, and they went, yeah, sure, I can't, before I make this decision, I'm just going to drink a bottle of vodka, and then I'm going to decide what to do with your finances. Or you go to your doctor and your health professional and said, look, I've got all these problems, blah, 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 do you think I've got cancer? Or, you know, I mean, I've got some ideas, but I've just got to drink this bottle of vodka. You know, like, so for one thing, that's not a very good way to be making the really big decisions in your life. As an aside, you know, and also all your money has disappeared. You haven't, you know, like, there's just a basic mechanics to it that's not very good, but that's not why I quit drinking. I got used to those mechanics. But, you know, if you quit drinking, actually, I can pretty well guarantee a couple of things you worry about. You'll start worrying about money and your health, and I'm guarantee they'll both get better but you just got spare time to think about it.
Fascinating. It's a good analogy as well. Just I find my doctor quite a sensible person. I'd be just thrown if she said to me, hang on a minute, I'll just have this, knock back this drink and we'll make a decision. Yeah, it's a good analogy. It's do you think for yourself, before you came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, do you think you've referred to the refugee thing, were you belonging to anywhere at all? Like the refugee was everything within your life?
Oh, okay, yeah. We do tend to be a bit disconnected.
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, there is, I mean, you know, I am male of a generation. So the way I got brought up is my dad liked Westerns. So there's this classic, you know, classic movies of Clint Eastwood will come into a town by himself and the only thing he cares about is his gun, his hat and his horse. So the fact that I felt really isolated, I just didn't worry about it too much. I just got kind of used to that. So in retrospect, it wasn't a good thing, but I wasn't conscious of it. So that wasn't like, it wasn't like I was thinking, oh, I wish I had more friends. And actually, I think my personality is still a little bit like that anyway. You know what I mean? I do have friends in my life and I interact with people a lot better. And even, I saw this really weird article once where the head of the New Zealand Army said one of the things about New Zealand is we interact with our waitresses like they're people. I forget exactly how he said it. He said it better than I just, you know, tried to repeat it. And it's true. And I'm like that, you know, like now when I go and buy a coffee, you know, I notice the other person, I say, you all right? And I really talk to them. And I'm not trying to get laid or get money or get a free cappuccino. I'm just, I can see another human being and I can see that they're a little bit off and can I help? And once upon a time, I wouldn't have been able to see the maths in that. You know, am I going to get laid? Am I going to get a free cappuccino? You know, like, it's her life, who gives a shit? Or just not have the skills to notice it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that, I suppose, I don't know, that quite.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Do you find you have a community anywhere in the world you go to now because you've got Alcoholics Anonymous behind you? Or in your life, I should say?
Well, yeah, I do, but it's not why I do it. But, yeah, like, for example, I've been to AA meetings in Cambodia, Thailand, India, Brussels, England, Scotland, blah, 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 blah. And wherever you go, there's always one kind soul. I don't know why, but just randomly there is. And funnily enough, this might sound a bit poor, but it's a bit like McDonald's. You know, they set them out differently all over the place, but you get a Big Mac wherever you go. So it's remarkably uniform, considering there are no rules. There's nobody sort of going around saying, oh, no, you're running this meeting wrong. That's not how we do it. You know, head office is going to close you. It just doesn't work that way. So it's quite bizarre. So I don't do it for that reason, but if I go to Cambodia, I'll go to a meeting, and because I don't think I'll drink in Cambodia, but because I just have a good habit, for lack of a better. It's actually, now I'm going to contradict myself, but it's a bit like having a cigarette. You know, I feel a bit wound up. I'll go to a meeting, I'll feel relaxed. That would be the short version of why I go to a meeting. But it does mean, yeah, accidentally, there is kind of benefits to that because you're hanging around with locals, although the locals might often be Americans. Or Kiwi, you know what I mean? But when I say local, but people actually live in Cambodia, or they might be Cambodian locals. So it is kind of nice that you connect with people that actually live in the area in that way. But I think if you joined AA because you thought that was going on, that would be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very, that's not what it's about at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about yourself.
Yeah, it's about actually the two of us don't really need to, think help each other. Oh, actually, I was going to ask you a question. There is a slight chance that my companion in the car can help me out with something, but it has to do with a problem with a friend of mine, so we might talk that through. But our relationship isn't. Oh. I mean, alcoholics do help each other out, but it's usually in a very blunt way to do with drinking, isn't it?
I find us to be the most incredibly honest and forthcoming people.
There's no subtext.
If there's an issue, let's deal with the issue and then let's move on.
Yeah, we won't talk about the weather very much.
No. And there's not, I find there's not so much judgment. The judgment just isn't there. It's like, oh, well, this is the issue. Let's get on with it.
Mm-hmm. I get the question you're asking because I got a bit obsessed with the idea of people just... Yeah, it is one of the things that I like. By accident, I'm a member of a community, and it's a community that's all over the world. So that is a really nice thing. And actually, there's a book in AA called A New Pair of Glasses. It's not very, very popular. It's quite an old book. And it says that, you know, that I'm seeing the world differently. Like bear goggles would be a variation on that thing. So it only has one diagram. It does this big circle. And it's got the world, and then it's got a stick figure next to it, and it's me. That did capture a feeling that I forget about, though, that's kind of gone, because I did feel, you know, lonely in a really, you know, even though, again, I'm contradicting myself, but I forget, you know, it's a long time since I had a drink.
Yes, exactly.
But I did feel, you know, very alone. I don't know if I felt lonely, but very, nobody was, you know, it's a strange feeling.
I so understand what you're saying. Yeah, there was this... alone in this world, that has gone through this program for me. But yeah, it's a community. I like the picture. I haven't seen that book. Oh. And that, yeah, the picture of the world, and there's me as a stick figure. It is true.
It's like the two of us have a restaurant in common, and it was a very, very cool restaurant. And I used to care a lot about such things. Now I do care, but I don't know. But anyway, so in theory, I'd work around clothes design and stuff like that. So I was, you know, in theory, wearing great clothes, and I was in this very cool place, and people knew what drinks I had. And but I remember just thinking, I feel uncool, and I just didn't
belong.
I was already drunk.
Mm.
You know, I had relatives who owned the place. So I was wearing fabulous clothes. All of these things were not hitting the, you know, spot.
It's really funny, listeners, actually, because through discussion, Peter and I have discovered that we drank in the same places at the same times, but neither one of us remember each other. So, you know, we would have been standing maybe even next to each other in a bar.
Yeah, you might have seen me drink at their bar.
No, I probably did. But, yeah, it's a crazy world that... I mean, it does. It rotates, doesn't it? And that's it. Here we are today sitting talking about sobriety and the journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so grateful that you took this time with me today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for buying me a coffee.
That's okay. But I really appreciate the time that you've taken. And, yeah, I think that you're another valued member of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've come across. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks.
You are listening to the AA Live Show in association with our friends from Otago Access Radio on 105.4 FM. It has been a pleasure being in the rooms with Kevin this evening. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Hey, I just want to remind our listeners that if you want to drink, that is your business. But if you want to stop, that is the business we're in. So we found a way that works. Jump on to our aa.org.nz site. It will show you all the meetings within New Zealand. It'll show you online, in person, what's an open meeting, which means you can take a support person with you, or a closed meeting, which is just the people who are alcoholics. So do jump on that website, aa.org.nz. We also have a wonderful phone line, which is 0800 AA Works. That is 0800 229 6757. Now, you'll get another alcoholic in recovery on the other line of that. That's one of the services that we volunteer ourselves to. So that's 0800 AA Works. Give them a call. It goes to each region. So, you know, sometimes those people will come up and do what we call a 12 step, and they'll come and pick you up and take you to a meeting if you need any help, or just, you know, somebody to go with, because for some reason it's really scary to go to your first meeting.
First meeting, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd work the 800 number. Sometimes if you call, you might get me on the other end of the line. So
I tell you, we've got stardom in here this evening. This is wonderful. Hey, and if you would like to email us, which we did actually have a listener do that, this I got one today, which was a lovely email, and I'll talk about it the next show probably. But you can email us at aa.live.radio@gmail.com. Now, we're going to finish with a song this evening. We are going to finish session with a bit of Elton John. Now, this was my first ever concert I went to, and my parents packed us up just as he was singing Benny and the Jets, and they didn't want to get stuck in the traffic. I was, my parents would say, my bottom lip dropped, and I sulked all the way home because that was one of my favorite songs.
I saw Elton John and Billy Joel together in concert in Orlando, Florida.
Oh, that would have been fun.
Yes, it was.
Oh, my gosh. Did they have a little bit of a piano off, to speak? That would have been brilliant.
Yeah.
Gosh, yeah, that's some talent. And I grew up with Billy Joel as well, so there you go.
Quite a show.
Yeah, I imagine. Hey, thank you, everybody, for being out there this evening with us, and I especially thank Kevin. Kakite to you, Kevin. You are wonderful, and it is lovely to have spent the evening with you. Thank you. And until next time, folks, mate wā. I hope you enjoy it at Elton.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.